Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of this Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live. Buckle up because we'll be discussing the church in the news. If you have questions about things happening out there in the wider world and how they relate to the church, we have the guy who knows with us today. Give us a call, 888-318-7884. If you have questions, comments about the church in the news today, 888-318-7884. Al Cresta is our guest. For a long time, I thought his name was Cresta in the Afternoon, but that's actually the name of his show he hosts each day on Catholic stations across the country. That show is a production of Ave Maria Radio, of which Al is one of the founders. Al Cresta, thank you so much for joining us on Catholic Answers Live.
Well, Si, thank you so much. It's great having the invitation. It's good to be with you.
Yep, and I had never met you before, and we just got a moment to shake hands and say hello in Alabama last week. And that was a great honor and privilege for me, Al. And I don't know if you can tell, but I'm trying to do my best radio voice today so that I belong on the air with you.
Well, after 30 years, you do get mellow. So
I guess so. So there's no news. I'm sorry that we've got you on because it's really a slow news time these days. Nothing happening. We rarely see it so quiet. What do you attribute like this? Doesn't it? Sometimes it feels like it's just an onslaught. There's just so much news that you can hardly get to it all. To what do you attribute that? It feels like we're in one of those times now.
Yeah, partially because we've got more information available to us. It's been growing since the middle of the 1990s. It took a big jump in the middle of the 2000s, and it just continues to expand. More and more people are setting up independent investigations. More and more people are using Facebook to pass along news, and so it's hard for people to understand how different it is. My kids don't understand how different it is. Back when I began in broadcasting in 1987. You could watch a program like Nightline at 11:30 and find topics and find guests, and you could get them onto your own program the next day, and people would think that, wow, where did you get those guys? Now you've got a competition for those guests where not only cable news, but there's been an explosion of talk radio, too. It starts out in 1987 is when its real big burst begins, but then it just has continued ever since. And so I think the reason why we have this impression that there's so much going on is because we're surrounded by storytellers and media experts who continue to reinforce that. There are always important things going on. Life is rich, and it's important for us to kind of understand, get properly oriented to these issues. But I do think it has a lot to do with the electronic cocoon that we're living within.
Do you think that there's a danger to that cocoon?
Absolutely. Oh. Absolutely, especially for Christians. News focuses on the momentary, the ephemeral, the glistening. I mean, it used to be said that news is anything that makes you say gee whiz. So it focuses on novelty. The Christian, the fundamental orientation of the Christian is on eternity, though. Our focus is on the Liturgy of the Hours, Mass, corporal works mercy, Bible study, an ancient book that's been around for 4,000 years. So there is a real contrast between the modern world with its emphasis on the momentary, the glittering, the arresting, the compelling, and the approach of biblical spirituality and Catholic spirituality, which is to focus on the eternal, to see all things under the aspect of eternity. And we can easily – it's happened to me many times over the years where you lose your eternal orientation and get wrapped up in the press of events, the given debates, the increased volume and polarization – And it's important to fall out of the web of all of that stuff and back into the arms of the one who loves us for eternity.
Wow. Very, very well put. It gives me the sense, too, that if when you talk about the ephemeral nature of news, that it's just the whatever the glittering, shiny thing is of the moment, we're gonna obsess about that. And then tomorrow we'll obsess about the next thing. And then you see the church being interpreted through that filter, more or less.
Yeah.
So, and the example that comes to mind is probably it's ancient news by now, but I remember when Pope Benedict put out his first encyclical letter, Deus Caritas Est.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
God is love. And I remember a lot of the news commentary said, "Oh well, he's trying to burnish up his image, you know, because he's been known as the Panzer Cardinal, and it's been an."
Right.
And I was thinking, "Are you kidding me? Like this." God is love is the oldest and most important idea to the Christian faith, but that's the way they reported it as news.
Yeah, it's a public relations move on the part of Pope Benedict. There is a great example of the conflict between church and world. And, you know, the Christian can have one of three basic approaches to the world, it seems to me. I mean, you can get very complicated about this, but I think there's at least one of three ways. You can separate from the world. We usually think of the Amish doing that kind of thing, some monastic institutions separate from the world in that way. You can be accommodated to the world, in which when the world looks upon the church, they can't see any difference. Unfortunately, much of Catholic life in America has been accommodated to American society and culture now, so that the watching world can't see any distinction between Catholics. I'm not talking about weekly mass attending Catholics or Catholics in Bible study, but just that general self-identified Catholic. They don't see any difference between them and the world. And then there's a third approach, though, to the world, and that you might call this the kingdom approach. Knowing that Jesus reigns from on high over all things, and that we are here as members of his body on the earth to help transform the world to the degree that we can so that it better resembles the kingdom. So you can be a separatist, you can be an accommodationist, or you can become a transformationist. One of those three.
I like three.
I do too.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a test or anything, but I like three. Well, let me ask you a little bit about the church and the news.
Sure.
For example, the U.S. Catholic bishops meet. I think they meet twice a year. Maybe it's once a year.
No, they meet twice a year.
A year. Okay. So when you see that they just met, the reporting, I think the sum total of the reporting that I saw on the meeting in secular press involved. Instead of Cardinal Supich being elected to head the pro-life efforts, I guess the way it was reported was, you know, that it was some kind of slap at Cardinal Supich or at the Pope or something like that. And I just feel like this is worldly reporting on things, and it doesn't actually grab what is going on.
No, it doesn't at all. Archbishop Naumann was elected head of the pro-life committee. And he was the best person for that position. He has a remarkable history of standing up on behalf of the unborn. He is very intelligent and able to understand end-of-life issues as well. Cardinal Supich is still relatively new in the episcopacy. I mean, excuse me, in the major. He's a new cardinal.
Yeah.
But his move from Spokane to Chicago is still only a few years old. And there's also some question of exactly how he approaches the abortion issue. He had an article published in America Magazine many years ago now, in which he tried to bring together the death penalty, opposition to the death penalty and opposition to abortion. And there are many pro-life people that felt that he didn't quite get it right. So that may be out there. But to say that this was a slap in the face to Pope Francis, I think really overstates what's going on.
Yep.
The American bishops generally don't play that political. Generally, they don't play that political.
Well, it's probably bad strategy for bishops to slap at the Pope.
Yeah,
too.
Well,
like
true.
What bishop wants to do that?
Right.
So, did anything strike you out of that might not have been reported out of the Conference of Bishops meeting?
I think the most important thing was the continued commitment to religious liberty.
Yeah.
This became, I can remember when Archbishop Laurie was appointed as the ad hoc. He had the ad hoc committee on religious liberty. It looks as though there's going to be a permanent religious liberty commission. And Archbishop Kurtz has gone over there and he's going to be taking over leadership immediately. So I think the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, for all the effort that they've made over the last 50 years to try to be a servant of the American people in the best sense, and trying to show the church is willing to serve the poor, the disabled, is trying to be a voice for peace, trying to be a welcoming community.
Yeah.
In spite of all that they've done, they now stand looking at a government that is growing increasingly secular in its approach. And this is a government which, in fact, was trying to force the Little Sisters of the Poor to buy health insurance that included contraceptives.
Right.
That's the absurdity that we're running into. So I think the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is now committed for the long haul. I think they see religious liberty must be defended.
I see. It's not just a matter of this or that administration,
right,
or this. That there is a ongoing secularizing of the whole government project.
Yeah.
And it does seem it's presented, you know, go along or get out. Go,
right.
You know, you can go back to your church. We don't need you here.
Well, you may remember on the adoption issue, Catholic charities in many places have had to stop offering adoptions, and perhaps it's universal now. I remember the battle in Massachusetts and the one in Illinois where they were told they cannot cooperate with the state unless they release children to same-sex couples.
Yeah.
And, you know, even before the same-sex marriage decision, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops didn't release any children to unmarried couples, and yet they were given a hard time for not releasing them to same-sex couples.
Right.
So this is even before marriage.
888-318-7884 is our number. Al Cresta is our guest. Cresta in the Afternoon is his program that I am sure you have heard. And we're discussing the church in the news. What's going on out there in the world? How does it affect the church? And we pray in some ways, how does the church affect it? We'll tackle all that when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, everyone. This is country music artist Colin Ray. Do what I do and keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, everyone. Guess what? Catholic Answers is kicking off the annual winter sale in their online shop with great discounts on all of the books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, and MP3s that we carry. With great new releases on church history, scripture, Bible prophecy, and the saints, the shop at Catholic.com is once again your go-to place for solid Catholic resources with a store-wide discount to boot. Just enter the promo code WINTER at checkout in our newly redesigned shop, and you'll save 20% off your total purchase. That's right, 20% off of hundreds of great Catholic books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, and MP3s from now until the end of the year. That's shop.catholic.com.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. That familiar voice you hear with me today is Al Cresta from Cresta in the Afternoon, a production of Ave Maria Radio and heard on Catholic radio stations here, there, and everywhere. Al has joined us today to talk about the church in the news. And Al, we got a whole bunch of calls. Shall we turn there? All right.
Yeah, I love it.
Chip in Troy, Michigan, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. Chip, your question for Al Cresta.
How you doing, Al? Good to talk to
you. Doing great, Chip.
Excellent. My question is about Amoris Laetitia.
Sure.
And especially in regards to Cardinal Mueller's recent preface in that book that was just recently released. It sounded like Amoris Laetitia is very confusing, and I thought Cardinal Mueller had been a voice of reason and everything, but it sounds like in that preface that he's saying it's okay for people who are, you know, in a state of permanent and public adultery who have not made an amendment to life to receive communion.
I'd have to see those words to believe it. I just don't, if that's true, it's a complete reversal of what Cardinal Mueller has said in the past. You mentioned Amoris Laetitia is confusing. I only a small portion of it is. Much of it is just good, solid teaching. Chapter 8 comes in for some criticism because there are passages clearly that can be interpreted to imply that under certain conditions, couples who are living together in what we would call adultery, that they would be able to take Holy Communion, which in the past, of course, it was always extremely clear that that was itself a mortal sin. I don't think that's what Amoris Laetitia teaches myself. I think it has a problem, and I'm unhappy that the Holy Father has not seen fit to answer the questions that have been asked, you know, by Cardinal Burke has set forth. And I know in some cases the Maltese bishops stand out in my mind who have interpreted it in a more lenient direction. I think the primary purpose of Amoris Laetitia was to get clergy off their behinds and getting out into the households of their parishioners to help them deal with irregular marriages. That's what I think the overall intention was. I think that especially in areas like South America, where there's very big Catholic populations and a lot of Catholic power, but there's a lot of Catholic ignorance as well, I think the Holy Father was reacting to, you might call it clergy malpractice down there. So you've got people who are considering coming back to the faith. They don't know what the church teaches. They maybe think they can't get an annulment. And I think that's why Pope Francis really pushes the limit in Chapter 8 to welcome the, quote, welcome those who are in irregular marriages. But I don't think that his intention is to open, to in any way change the basic norm on this teaching, which we have from Pope John Paul II in Familiaris Consortio. I think it's paragraph 20. If you're married, if you're divorced as a Catholic, remarried, and having nuptial relations with your spouse, and there's been no annulment, you know, no legitimate marriage, then you should not be presenting yourself a Holy Communion. If you want the church to work with you on regularizing your marriage, by all means, step up and talk to your priest. The church is very welcoming, but you know what the norms are. I know what the norms are. Most priests I talk to know what the norms are. Most bishops I talk to know what the norms are, and I don't think they're changing. So I'm just saying you can watch this, watch how it develops, but I personally am going to stand with the church's teaching. It's been constant, and it's been defined clearly by John Paul II, and I can't imagine that Pope Francis thought that somehow he could do some sort of subterfuge, to play around with this. There's just too many well-educated Catholic laity these days. We have access to information. This is not the Catholic Church of 1750 or 1230. This is the Catholic Church in the 21st century, especially in America, where a huge number of American Catholics are well instructed in the faith. Not as many as we'd like, but there are plenty. I mean, shows like Catholic Answers didn't exist until 20 years ago. But we've had 20 years of Catholic radio and people hearing the teaching of the church. We stick with what the church teaches. And I don't think any speculation about a footnote or two in Amoris Laetitia is going to change that.
Okay, Chip?
Thank you so much for your level-headed approach.
Yeah. Thanks, Chip.
So he Good. Changed the discipline, you're saying?
No, I don't think that is going to be changed. And what can I say? If there are extraordinary circumstances, okay, in which a pastor felt that something had to be done because of reduced culpability on the part of the participants, we don't need to know. We don't even need to know about it. You don't write for those extraordinary circumstances. Those are supposed to be handled by the priest and the bishop away from the spotlight of public teaching. So no, nothing has changed. I do not see this changing, certainly not among the American bishops.
Chip, thank you very, very much for the call. We got lots of calls, so we're going to move on. Our topic this hour, the church and the news. Our guest, Al Cresta, and we go now to Paul in Denver, Colorado, watching the podcast. Paul, your question for Al.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, Al. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
I would be really interested in how you interpret the Holy Father's pronouncements on certain things that don't, on the face of them anyway, seem mm-hmm. to be very high up on the hierarchy of moral issues. So, for example, I think last week he was reportedly making a pronouncement about skeptics of climate change. Mm-hmm. And the paradox was, you know, the Holy Father is so forgiving and kind, but he seemed to be somewhat harsh in, right. in his view of the skeptics. Mm-hmm. And then he hosted, the Vatican hosted Jerry Brown and a number of others, but Jerry Brown made the headlines, and sort of a shadow American president and a shadow foreign policy when it comes to climate change. And, mm-hmm. You know, here Jerry Brown, who sadly, you know, is pro-abortion. And mm-hmm. I was just kind of wondering, how do you square those things? How do you look at what's the Holy Father's goal here? And why the seeming paradox?
Well, these are prudential questions, right? I mean, this has to do with the application of the faith to issues dealing with economics, politics, the natural sciences. And the Pope has to deal with these prudentially. This particular Pope feels he has to say, address these issues, because the world is addressing these issues. Now, there are two ways of approaching this. One is to see that he is trying to earn a hearing for the church by going after these issues. His immediate prudential judgments on them are not binding on us as Catholics. We should take him seriously. We should try to understand what the arguments are. But unless he's speaking on faith and morals, we are free to exercise our prudential judgment, our natural reason, do our investigation into things like climate change, and use the best information we've got. Now, let me back up just a little bit. If you read his encyclical on the common life together, what you'll find is the most compelling part of that is where he discusses human responsibility for stewardship of the environment. And in that, he actually goes on the attack against secular and kind of New Agey approaches to the environment. He shows that it is a fallacy to think that we can treat human beings as, abort easily, that we can dismiss the poor without great concern, and yet be claiming that we're caring for the redwoods. So in that encyclical, what he does is he gives a very strong Catholic argument on the theological merits of man's call to have dominion on the earth and be a good steward of the environment. But he also employs arguments on prudential issues that many of us just say, no, it doesn't seem that way to us. We may be wrong, but you must go with your very best judgments here. And this is not a matter of divine revelation. And I think, you know, if we show the respect he deserves, but we don't have to agree with all the prudential judgments. I hope that's clear. But I, you know, this is an ongoing problem people are having with this pontificate.
It is indeed. Al Cresta is our guest. The Church in the News is our topic. If you've got a question about how the church is being presented in the news or about something you've heard about the church in the news, we're happy to take those calls. 888-31-TRUTH. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As the legend goes, the Protestant Reformation began when Martin Luther nailed the list of his grievances with the Catholic Church to the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. But do you know the whole story? In Catholic Answers' brand new documentary, The Protestant Revolution, you will hear from top apologists Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Trent Horn, and Steve Weidenkopf as they expose the errors of Martin Luther and of the other so-called reformers. This DVD will give you a clearer understanding of our Protestant brothers and sisters, and you will be better equipped to engage them about what separates us and about what unites us. Order your copy of The Protestant Revolution today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting shop.catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Once you lose faith, if somebody does something to you and hurts you one time, two time, three time, four time, St. Peter thought seven was a good number. How often should I forgive my brother, Lord? Seven times? My Lord said, no. 70 times, 7 times a day.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Don't forget to join Radio Club. If you haven't done it, Catholic Answers Radio Club is available to you at catholic.com/radio club. You get the free MP3 of Jimmy's talk, What Was the Reformation All About? A free MP3 from Jimmy Akin. Just go to catholic.com/radio club, and then you get our little newsletter via email each week, in which we try to have a little fun and share a little bit of knowledge with you, and we don't bombard you with tons and tons of emails and stuff if you join Radio Club. Like if you sign up for whatever Al Cresta is doing, you know you're going to get like an email every 5 minutes from Al. So, oh, sorry, Al, didn't realize you were still there. That is not true. But yeah, go to catholic.com/radio club and join Radio Club today. We'd love to have you as a Radio Club partner. Our topic this hour, Church in the news. What's up with the church? What's up with the church's response to the news? And how is the church being treated by news outlets? If you have questions or comments about that, give us a call, 888-318-7884. Are there news items that perhaps are disturbing you from as a Catholic, or things that are being reported about the Catholic Church that you're just not sure whether or not they're true? 888-318-7884. I suppose the biggest news of the day, or it seems, Al, like we're in a spot. I don't even know if I said Al Cresta is our guest. Did I say that? I should probably mention that. But it seems that we have sexual offender of the day going on. It's disturbing. It's hard to know exactly what to make of it, but every day some new person is accused. Many of these accusations, frankly, seem quite convincing. That we in the Catholic Church have gone through our own sex abuse scandals starting around the year 2002, mm-hmm. I guess it mm-hmm. blew up. So we're kind of familiar with the way these things become frenzied. But that doesn't mean that the underlying stories are not true. But they can develop a kind of frenzy. We seem to be in one such frenzy. I wonder what your thoughts from a Catholic perspective are about all this.
I think one of the things to keep in mind here is that Catholic teaching hasn't changed in this area. And in spite of that, nobody brings up the fact that if we had an ethos in which women were respected and in which sexual encounters were within the bounds of marriage, that we would have a whole lot less of this. That just doesn't even come up for discussion. It gets silly after a while. Time magazine had one week, it had Hugh Hefner on the cover, and it was celebrating his life as a life of he's an emancipator. He's a liberator.
Yeah,
he knocked down the old Protestant ethos, Puritan ethos that inhibit us from enjoying sexual expression. The very next week, they had Harvey Weinstein on the cover, the guy who lived out Hefner's philosophy.
Right.
You know, and Time magazine apparently didn't quite get the inconsistency there, because all they're interested in doing is, of course, selling magazines. But here's a little-known fact about Hugh Hefner's life. When he married his girlfriend, Millie, they had been going out for a long time, and a lot of people find this a strange story. But when they married, he was 23, and Millie was the only woman that he had ever slept with, his wife. And he says, "The single most devastating experience of my life was when Millie admitted that she had had an affair while they were dating." I mean, this is what produced Hugh Hefner. He had saved himself. I'm reading from his own words here. "I had literally saved myself for my wife, but after we had sex, she told me that she'd had an affair. And my wife was now more sexually experienced than I was. And after that, I always felt in a sense that the other guy was in bed with us too."
Oh, so he's a hurt man acting out of his wounds.
Exactly. So he becomes a sexual glutton after that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do suppose there's something that there's a kind of American Puritanism on the one hand, which is almost the flip of a coin from the Hefner libertinism. And Catholic understanding of human sexuality, I don't even want to say it's in the middle of those two or something.
Right,
It's different. It's a different approach to sexuality.
Yeah. And John Paul II really has given us the fullest expression of this up to this date, and that is in the theology of the body. America has pretty much come to the point where consent is all that's necessary.
Yeah.
To define sexual involvement. And there's a religious studies professor down at Catholic U who has a great line, and he says, "Where sexual morality is rooted in nothing but consent, sexual mores will be decided by nothing but power." In other words, and I think that's what we're seeing in the life of Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey.
Right.
After a while, even consent doesn't make any difference, because there's nothing but the will See, and why do I need to get your will when my will is demanding this? So I think when we make the will consent,
yeah,
the one thing that we rely on, and I think that's what most Americans do, they say, hey, listen, if you have consent, it's all fine. If that's the only thing you got going for you, then the person who has the strongest will eventually prevail. And I just think it's a shame,
yeah,
that the reason people like Weinstein are being caught is not because of their objectifying of women, but because of their exercising their will over them. It's a problem of power.
Yeah.
And that's right. The only thing that people still complain about. It's a very impoverished approach to romance, a very impoverished approach to male-female relations, a very impoverished approach to sexual expression.
Well, you know, it's like they gave a sexual revolution. It started in the 50s and 60s, I suppose, and mm-hmm. and we lost. I mean, there's no question we lost.
Yeah.
But so did everybody else. Even the winners of the sexual revolution lost.
Absolutely. There's so many scars of those who participated. Jenny Roback Morris over at the Ruth Institute has been really specializing in dealing with victims of the sexual revolution. You know, you're looking at adult children of divorce. You're dealing with those who have suffered through various types of STDs. Looking at the people whose hearts have grown cold because of multiple sexual partners.
Yeah.
They no longer can believe in love. They can only believe in contact. So I agree, and actually, this should be a point of strength for us.
Yeah.
In other words, somebody like Jenny should be supported, so that her basic point that we're here to minister to those who have been wounded, hurt, bound up, enslaved because of the sexual revolution. I think that's probably the best way for us to show a Catholic understanding of these things. Nobody's listening to our preaching, that's for sure.
Well, the problem with Jennifer Roback Morris, I don't know if you know this, but her organization, the Ruth Institute, is a hate group. Were you aware of that? That is a real thing. The Southern Poverty Law Center she's a hate group. And you just have to say, well, okay, but where's the hate? Like, who is she hating? She's saying there's victims of the sexual revolution. Everybody knows that's the case. But it's because, you know why she's a hate group? Because she says marriage is between a man and a woman and it's permanent.
Yep.
That's hatred, Al.
It's a sad situation. This is actually one of the big problems we're facing in religious liberty right now.
Yeah.
And the Obama administration released a document a few years ago in which they said that, in essence here, this, by the way, this document was called, so people can look this up for themselves. It was called Peaceful Coexistence, Reconciling Non-Discrimination Principles with Civil Liberties. And in this document, they seem to really bear down on those who opposed same-sex so-called marriage, and they were willing to religiously bind people if they wanted to preach against same-sex marriage, if they refused to, you know, if bakers refused to make cakes for same-sex weddings. Anyways, the language in it is worth reading because Martin Castro, who is the chairman of the group, said the phrases religious liberty and religious freedom will stand for nothing except hypocrisy so long as they remain code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, Christian supremacy, or any form of intolerance. That's what he said.
In other words, as long as you agree with us, just have all the freedom you want.
That's right.
But if you have any critique at all of the sexual revolution, boy, there are those who would do whatever they can just to tell you to be quiet. They say, go sit down and go away, because we have to take a break, Al, but the thing is, it all defies evidence. You know, all of the evidence is that things didn't get better with the sexual revolution. They didn't get better for anybody.
Right.
But despite all of that evidence, you still, if you're not full-throated in support of it, you are a bigot.
Yeah.
Al Cresta is the man, and he is our guest this hour. We're talking about the church and the news. I have neglected to go to the phone, so I will do that when we come back. I am Cy Kellett, your host. This is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back after this.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett from Catholic Answers Live, and as we head down the stretch toward the end of the year, Catholic Answers is kicking off the annual winter sale in their online shop with great discounts on all of the books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, and MP3s we carry. With great new releases on church history, scripture, Bible prophecy, and the saints, the shop at Catholic.com is once again your go-to place for solid Catholic resources with a store-wide discount in addition. Just enter the promo code WINTER at checkout in our newly redesigned shop and you'll save 20% off your total purchase. That's right, 20% off hundreds of great Catholic books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, and MP3s from now until the end of the year. That's shop.catholic.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 17:26, Jesus spoke of the day the Son of Man will be revealed. It will be similar to the days of Noah, when there was eating and drinking and marrying up to the day of the flood. Similarly, his coming will be so sudden that many will be unprepared in spite of all his efforts to prepare us. Two people may be engaged in the same activity, but only the one centered on him he will take to himself. We must subject everything about our lives to him. He must matter more to us than everyone and everything. For most of us, the final general judgment will be preceded by our own particular judgment when we die. How prepared are we? How much does he matter to us in the way we live our daily lives? Is this even on our radar? In today's liturgy, he is asking. He is asking us now. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Well, if you're going to have a great week, you might as well have a great ending to that week, and we have had a great week here at Catholic Answers. I want to thank you again, all of those who supported us over the last 3 days as we came to you to ask for your help in keeping this show on the air and helping us to do all those things we try to do now, being on Facebook and YouTube and Periscope and even on EWTN television now. We're grateful for all that. We're very grateful for your support. And so when I say we've had a good week, I really mean we've had a good week. And we're having a great hour with Al Cresta. We're talking about the church in the news. Al is the host of Cresta in the Afternoon on Catholic radio stations all over the place. I'm sure Al is heard all over the world. The stations across the country, but also heard all over the world. I kept callers away because I was enjoying talking with you, Al, but I'm going to let some callers in now.
Okay.
We go to Joe in Youngstown, Ohio, watching on YouTube Live. Joe, thanks for watching. Your question for Al. Joe? I did make you wait a long time, Joe. Is Joe still there? Joe, wake up.
Oh, sorry about that. I'm here.
No, that's okay. I take naps, too, at this time in the afternoon, so I'm glad we woke you up. Your question for Al Cresta.
Thank you for having me, guys. Hope you're doing well. You said earlier that kind of a slow news-ish week or day or whatever for the church, but maybe I could be you guys' segue into the entertainment version of Catholic news.
Okay.
I saw that in the last couple of days on Instagram and Facebook. I'm a huge gearhead, so I'm subscribed to a lot of automotive content. And I saw that Lamborghini has donated, I believe, one of their Huracans, one of their vehicles, to Pope Francis and the Vatican to be auctioned off for charity. And I've never seen that happen before, and I wondered how often does that happen? What do you guys have to say?
How deep does your knowledge of this go, Joe? Does the Pope get to drive it before they auction it, or like is he going to be zipping around?
I don't know, but I mean, if I was the Holy Father, I'd be taking that thing for a rip through some of the Italian countryside.
Yeah. I don't know if he's a gearhead, though, as you say, Joe.
That would be a sight.
Yeah, Al, what do you think about that?
Well, as you said earlier when we were talking about this, I look. I'd rather have them auctioned off than go racing around with it. But, this is interesting because Lamborghini did this as a public relations move. It's a piece of advertising. They made this for the Pope. It's papally themed. It's got special gold features to it. I don't know. I mean, it's a way of showing respect. It's a way of getting attention. And the Holy Father is going to auction it off. And I've been told that the money's going to be going to Iraqi Christians. So, yeah, I just think it's funny. And I don't know what else I would do with it. Joe, what would you do with it?
I honestly don't know because I like the idea of Lamborghinis, but I'm an American Muscle kind of guy. I don't really want to have it, so I guess I'd auction it off too.
So you'd, if it was a Cobra and you were the Pope, you'd take it, but you're not going to take a Lamborghini.
I'll go one step further. If it was a Corvette, I'd take it. I'm not a Ford guy either. I know it's real complicated.
Yeah, that's the way you car guys are, though. It's like when you get right down to it, it's like you're not a car guy. You're a Chevy guy. And another guy is a Ford guy. Another guy's an Aston Martin guy. Well, I don't know if the Pope's a Lamborghini guy, but I mean, it is. I don't know what you get for a Lamborghini, but I'm glad they're supporting Iraqi Christians. And we all should be supporting Iraqi Christians. And one way to do that, by the way, is to go to the Knights of Columbus. If you support the Knights of Columbus, they're helping coordinate those funds. Maybe the Pope will give it to the Knights of Columbus. I don't know. This has happened before, though. Nick, our sound guy, just said another Pope got a Harley Davidson. Or was it Francis, Nick, that got the same Pope got a Harley Davidson. I know that Pope John Paul got a Mercedes at one point.
Yeah.
I don't know who he gave it to. I'm glad to have a gearhead call, though, Joe. I appreciate that call.
Oh, thank you guys for taking me.
Hey, Joe, thanks. We need a man with real knowledge on these things.
That's
right. Appreciate it.
Yes, as we kind of vamp our way through it. I'm glad somebody knows what's going on. Joe, thanks very much. How about John in Connecticut listening on EWTN? John, it's the Church in the News with Al Cresta on Catholic Answers Live. Your question, please.
Good evening, guys. Good evening, Al.
Hi.
I wanted to ask the question. I'm not a gearhead, but I would maybe consider myself a church geek. And I think your talk about news is, you know, it's slow news day, but I think there's so much news today with the explosion of all this different media, particularly Catholic or Christian media. And one of my struggles and a friend's struggle is how do I filter so much out there? And you can get caught up in various blogs that criticize the church. Right. You can get caught up in stations that are so Pollyannish, you think, you know, it doesn't really matter if you're Catholic or not. And I thought, with Al's experience, can you have any suggestions to people who can, to avoid the danger of getting too caught up and going down a rat hole of various news services and blogs and internets and losing sight of the fact of actually living the Catholic life?
Yeah, this is a major problem that you're bringing up. I do a talk called Be Not Conformed to This World, in which I look at the proliferation of blogs and websites and information access, and how and I speak as somebody who has fallen victim to this problem myself. You have to discipline yourself. You have to find, what I do is I find particular people. Some of them I've known for years, and I know I can trust them. And I limit my conversation, I limit my research on daily affairs, you know, news events, pretty much to their blogs. Now, people will send me other stuff, too, and I can pursue that. But nobody can cover it all. And I've said before, and I give a little plug here for the National Catholic Register, that newspaper is doing a lot to kind of help us focus, because they've got quite a few bloggers there, but they've got some serious journalists that are doing work, and they know the ins and outs of church life. So I would pick, you know, a few different newspapers. You can't, you know, nobody's going to read the New York Times, the Washington Post, the L.A. Times, the Indianapolis Star, you know, the Miami Herald. Nobody's going to go through all that. And people who tell you they're doing it are lying. We have to get out of that sense that we need to be in the know, always in the know.
Yeah.
As though somehow we're being groomed to be the ambassador to Maui or something. No, we're not. We're just basic citizens here, and we're prayerful church people. Another thing you can do is get a publication called Operation World, all right? The reason now this is done by an evangelical group, but it's a thick volume, and it has every nation in the world in a small encyclopedia entry. So they tell you what the issues are there, the long-term issues, the religious content, areas for prayer. And what I do is when issues come up in Libya, in Mauritania, and you know they've come across my eyes, I just pull that out, and I can immediately offer a prayer for what's going on there. And what that does is it integrates your spiritual life and your prayer life into all of this sensory overload that's coming in from news, international news. So that's another thing that I do. So I limit the number of sites that I personally go to. Now, because of my work on air, I have two other people who are helping me with this. So they bring things. So that every morning, they bring me a raft of material to quickly look through. But personally, I only look through about a dozen different sites a day, and I wouldn't even do that if I didn't have the ministry that I do. So those are two things. I use Operation World to keep me thinking that all of this news is supposed to drive me to my knees. And again, I limit the sources that I consult. And also, hang around with people that you trust. Not everybody deserves your ear. Years ago, we used to know that. Now we seem anybody who can get our attention with an odd meme or something we think is worthy of paying attention to. No, don't do it. Find the people that you can trust.
John, how's that strike you?
Yeah, I think your point of I spend too much time reading, and I think your point about connecting your spiritual reading or your news reading to prayer and spiritual reading, getting involved in things that are into your interior life and not just get caught up in the news of the day, whether it's, you know, who's criticizing the Pope for Emeritus Letizia,
right,
or what have you, you know.
And ask yourself, what can you really settle on this? You know, I'm on a thread. I'm on a thread with a number of first-rate scholars, both theologians and canon lawyers, and also some exegetes. And I'm watching them debate Emeritus Letizia. And these are thoroughly committed Catholics, lovely people. I know them all. And they are going at it. And I'm telling you, they're not going to settle this, as brilliant as they are, as faithful as they are, because it's not in their jurisdiction. This is something that only the hierarchy is going to end up settling for us. Once we get a good grasp of what's going on out there, we should end the drama, and we should say, okay,
right,
this is what I know the church teaches. I'm not going to get into this fight. We're not going to vote on this at some point, right? So get familiar with the issues, and then play cool.
John, thank you very, very much for that call. We're talking with Al Cresta, the host of Cresta in the Afternoon. We're talking about the church in the news. Grateful for everyone's calls. I got a question for you from myself, Al, before we go. And I know lots of callers have calls about Pope Francis and all that kind of thing. And I'm grateful for those because I don't even know how to categorize Pope Francis, but he's certainly an exciting figure, whether that excitement is in a negative sense or a positive sense. Mm-hmm. And so you get a lot of that. But several callers want to know about the dubia. And is the Pope going to answer them or not going to answer them? And I'll leave that in your court.
I don't know. It doesn't look like it, right? I mean, these were not difficult questions.
Yeah.
They were well stated. And for whatever reason, he decided not to answer them. And that's why, you know, we had Father Thomas Wynandi send a letter to the Pope, too. Look, if the Holy Father isn't going to answer a series of questions from cardinals, then he's not going to answer a letter from a single theologian.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't think we're going to get it answered. And I'm personally, I regret that. But it's not my jurisdiction.
Right, right. Really? You're not? Nobody put you in charge of the Pope? Come on, Al. That's clearly an oversight on the part of the church. Al Cresta, host of Cresta in the Afternoon, thank you so much. I really enjoyed getting to spend an hour with you.
So I will talk again soon, huh?
I hope we will.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Al.
Thanks for having me.
And again, thanks to everybody who's listened this week. Thanks to everybody who supported us during our pledge drive. As I said, first hour, if you weren't here, we don't have numbers yet, or maybe somebody has the numbers, but I do see a lot of smiles around this place. So I know that lots of people did call and did support us. Jesus Christ is the light of the nations, and we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.